Good morning or good afternoon, depending on where you are, and welcome to another episode of our 2026 run of webinars. Today, hot on the tail of the Artemis lunar mission and the maelstrom of reinvigorated conspiracy theories that have resurfaced and potentially hit you on social media, we're putting our tinfoil hats on ourselves and jumping into another conspiracy, and that is the dead internet theory. Before we jump into that, though, I will just like to introduce my co-host for today. So I am joined, I've got the great pleasure of being joined by the excellent Brian Martin, who I'm sharing the stage with a lot of our Security First conferences and having the pleasure of doing that. And here we are again on one of our webinar series. So we seem to come
Good
as a pair
morning.
now these days, Brian. So Brian is our Director of Product Management at Integrity 360, and he's responsible for managing and developing Integrity 360 group portfolio of cybersecurity services and solutions. He has extensive experience across IT, software development, and telecoms, and 10 years focused on cybersecurity in all of its aspects. So, Brian, very, very welcome to the webinar, and thanks for joining me.
Delighted to be here, and I forgot my tin foil hat, but I'll get it
Yeah. Probably should have prepared for those
later.
beforehand. There you go. We'll sort that out in the edit, I'm sure. So just before we jump on, I just want to flag a few things. So flag that this session is being recorded. So for anybody that's interested to re-watch or share with any colleagues, the link will be sent out to you afterwards. And we will be holding a Q&A session at the very end. So please use the Q&A function that is at the bottom of your Zoom window. If anybody would like translated captions, they are also available. You should have a captions button as well. And we will be running some polls throughout this webinar. So please join in. Please post your votes or your options, because we want to know your opinion, and then we can dive down into those as we go throughout. So let's kick off. The dead internet theory. What is it? Why are we talking about it? Well, that theory really proposes that a large or growing portion of the online content, the internet interaction, and engagement is no longer human generated, but it's all by automated systems and AI driven agents. And although the term that we talk about there in terms of the dead internet theory sort of originated from fringe online discussions, the underlying concept has become increasingly relevant to cybersecurity leaders, to our cybersecurity professionals like ourselves. And that's all driven by the advances in generative AI, automation, and agent-based systems. I think the concept or the dead internet theory, when it was coined, was way back in 10 years ago, in 2016, is when it started to surface. And you can see actually since then, there's been huge changes in the makeup of the internet, the makeup of our systems, and are driven by AI that we've seen that big change. So in this session, the theory, we're not using it entirely as a conspiracy narrative. We're not trying to convert anybody to our cult, but really as a practical framework for understanding that sort of fundamental shift in how the internet operates. Historically, human limitations, time, effort, creativity, all created sort of rudimentary friction points that constrained the scale. AI operations, really removes that hugely, and that is going to have an impact on what we are doing. And that implications really for how organizations start assessing things like trust. That comes all the way to threats that we're going to talk about, and how we can make decisions based on digital information. A lot of that comes down to authenticity. Can we, how do we understand and guarantee authenticity? So we're not claiming that the internet is dead by any way or means, but looking at that ratio between human synthetic activity. And then from a security perspective, really framing that or reframing that, because it highlights that erosion in trust models. Do we need to look at them? Because they underpin a lot of what we do, particularly when it comes to verification, identity, communication, and beyond. So there's really the dead internet theory, why we're getting down into it. So let's have a look at some of the reasons why we're discussing it. A lot of that, as I mentioned, really comes down to trust. And we can sort of start looking at, what was the internet's original trust assumptions? And we can go way back. And we can actually take this really far back, probably into the 70s with ARPANET, that was at the early beginnings of the internet. And it was all built upon implicit trust assumptions that went unquestioned for decades. Slowly we started bringing those in, but if we think about early internet, it was all built to work, and it was built on that understanding, or that assumption, that no one was going to misuse it. And obviously we soon found that wasn't the case, and started to put some controls in there. But if we reflect that back to the dead internet theory, we can start going, well, actually, do you know what? One of our chief assumptions when we started using the internet, and something that we all now have to teach our kids very, very quickly as they starting getting more involved in the digital world, was that belief that content was, authored by humans, and interactions usually involved real people, and that that. Our efforts to an effort, a resource cost to create any material was, that natural barrier that prevented abuse to a certain respect. And these, these assumptions really have shaped our security architecture, our modern strategies, and our verification processes. But if we look at those sort of human limitations, it's things such as typing speed, it's such as attention span fatigue, social norms. They act as those informal safeguards. We even think about when we're using verification, are you human? Looking for things that are very human related. That is very much changing for us. And that's what we need to be start to be considering, and building those controls, because we look at that desire to put a human in the loop, which is critically important, that is putting that validation, is putting that escalation point for when we're looking at alerts. But are these assumptions, still required? Are they still viable? Things that we need to ask questions around. A lot of that comes down to, what is being outputted, that the ability to produce convincing, meaningful text, images, audio, a scale, is has eroded those traditional barriers that, in the early days of the internet would be completely unthinkable. And that's really where we're starting to see some of those, that dead internet theory come to life and understand, exactly why we've become concerned with it, and why we're even here talking about it today. So, why are those assumptions really starting to break? Well, firstly, it's the AI is obviously driving that trust erosion. And actually, that's one of the things we're going to touch upon throughout this webinar, is looking at actually what are the elements that are being eroded, and what do we need to face, and how what should we be doing about those? And it has removed that friction that I was talking about. Generative models, they can create, high quality content instantly. Agentic systems can act in, completely autonomously, to distribute, respond to, and reinforce that content. Scale has become a dominant factor, as we'll see. And it's, although I've got sort of scale over quality, but actually, the quality is there, and we can now act at scale when creating content, when we're interacting with people, to be able to affect that authenticity that is under threat as the age of AI develops. In terms of, being able to do that at scale, one of the things, if we went far enough back, one of those elements of friction was fatigue. There was a limited number of resources. Obviously, AI systems do not have that factor of fatigue, and can do that continuously, which means that we can do things at mass scale. And when I hand over to Brian a little bit later, we can start looking into some of that, particularly when we start looking at phishing activity. And that really sort of fits into that narrative actually, and we see that in terms of influence operations, you know, that synthetic influence, we can amplify that, particularly through, you know, feedback loops that are constantly amplifying that that conversation over and over again. And I'm pretty sure if you looked at the, although I think there were some wild accusations placed against Twitter and X, particularly around the time that Elon Musk was acquiring it, potentially to push down that the cost of acquiring it, around the volume of the material that was all driven by bots, which was a huge amount. We're going to see that, you know, we're already seeing that, you know, potentially going and increasing overall. We're also seeing a shift in the risk landscape for us, and that's really what we're going to get down into. You know, that we need to look at how we are augmenting and improving our controls, you know, moving away from a human-centric internet, and making sure that we're moving towards something that can operate at the speed and scale that we need today. So that's the, you know, the dead internet, you know, what, why, what it is, you know, what those assumptions were and why they're breaking down. So let's jump into our first poll question. And really, our poll question is looking at your view of what percentage of online traffic do you believe was non-human last year? So we'll just give a few seconds for people to cast their votes. Okay, so I think a good majority have voted. So far, I see some more coming in. But Rebecca, if you want to cap that off, and we can have a look at the results of that poll and where people think it sits on that line between human and non-human. So I think if we look at that, you know, probably a good amount, almost half, I would say, or getting close to half, so 38% there, believe it's somewhat more human than human. And then the next highest is way more human than non-human, over 75%. So, you know, some interesting opinions there, but actually, let's get into what that actually looks like. So, if we look at global internet traffic, and we're taking this from Imperva's bad bot report for last year, actually we see that it is just last year has only just tipped the scales where non-human traffic holds the majority, but only by 1%. And actually, one thing that's interesting there is, you know, firstly, you know, their definition, good bot, bad bot. Obviously, looking at good bots being things that are you're populating Google and others, and obviously bad bots looking for opportunities to exploit and beyond. But I think the most interesting thing is that that trend line that we see on the right there, that good bots, you know, we've seen a pretty level trend of what percentage of the internet they make up. But actually, what that change that we've seen over the last few years that has got it to that inflection point of where the majority, or the, you know, the majority just of traffic, of all web traffic, being machine generated, is the increase in bad bots that are operating on the internet. So, is the internet completely dead at this stage? Well, do you know what? No, looks like the answer based on this this study, but it's only half dead. So, you know, we still retain a lot of the internet traffic ourselves at the moment. If we look at, oops, I'll just get that to move on. If we look at the report from Human Security that looks at the growth rate and the changes of AI traffic and their cyber threat benchmark, what we can actually see, and I think there's some very interesting stats here, that although it's 50% of it is still seeing human, we're seeing a huge growth rate. So under, you know, aligning with Imperva's view of the world, we're seeing that huge growth rate of automated versus human traffic. You know, and I think, you know, obviously starting from a very, very low base, you've got this huge number of almost 8,000% year-on-year growth of agentic AI traffic. And when we look at Cloudflare's report, you can see that bots make up 94% of all login attempts that are recorded overall, which actually is a huge amount. And it also talks to the fact that we can look at the internet and say, well, 50% is human and 50% is machine. And we can break down that view of, well, actually, good bots versus bad bots, and what are those bad bots focusing on? You can see actually that that mix very much changes depending on the activity. And moving into looking at login attempts, that huge amount of the login attempts that are being made, and almost the majority of all login attempts. So it shows the scale of brute force attacks, password guessing, password sprays that are ongoing, that are attempting to log into open systems. And you can say, actually, does that come down to the operation of the internet at the moment, and how we operate on an identity first basis? If we look at the cloud, we're no longer looking at limiting where you can log in from. It's really purely down to how you can verify yourself around identity. So we're looking at authentication, authenticity of those requests, and that ability to initiate a login from everywhere is obviously being targeted by these bots to look at actually how can we compromise them. So that's probably one thing that we need to think about straight away when we're talking about the internet, the dead internet, is that focus on identity. Is that top of mind at the moment? How can we authenticate? How can we make sure that our communication, our logins are entirely authentic? So that's a quick look at the dead internet theory. So what I'm going to do now is hand over to Brian and look at one of those key aspects, particularly around AI generated activity, and that is the rise of deepfakes. So Brian, over to yourself.
Thank you, Rich. So I'm going to take a walk through deepfakes and what they are and sort of the intent behind them. And I think we can see from those stats, even though it's 50-50 today in terms of human, non-human, more or less, with that exponentially higher growth rate of non-human, the mix has only gone one way. And I've seen some numbers. There's no kind of definitive, nobody can have a definitive prediction. But the broad mix of predictions are that by 2030, I think the mix will be more like 80-20, in that range. So the rise of deepfakes, Sean, just before I get into this, I'd be interested to see, take a second poll, which is to see who's encountering what in relation to deepfakes. So, which of these has your organization encountered in the last 90 days? AI-generated phishing, deepfake voice video, synthetic identities, disinformation affecting brand, or not sure, haven't seen it. Because it's set up as a single choice, put in the one that you have. Yeah. If you've seen more than one, put in the one you've seen the most. We could have set it up as a multi-select and got more responses, but it's fine just to see what is the primary one people are experiencing. So we give that a minute to answer, and then we'll come back with the results. And there we have the results have come in. So what we can see is 35% not sure or haven't seen it, which means that the majority have seen something. And number one, AI generated phishing and impersonation attempts. So that is probably to be expected. We all know the quality and the scale and the volume of phishing, particularly email phishing. It has massively scaled up with the advent of AI, and that it was almost a direct correlation with the advent of ChatGPT and equivalents. But interestingly, still a good percentage of deepfake voice and video, synthetic identities, and disinformation as well, making up 22%, so nearly a quarter of the
Yeah,
overall.
I think the videos and voice fraud, I think it's interesting that and fits with what we're going to discuss today, Brian. And you know, things that that have been discussed that we're starting to see those more and more.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, moving on then. And yes, what we're seeing is year on year, incidents involving deepfakes are at an all-time high and increasing as the tooling and the capabilities increase. So we're seeing, massive volumes of deepfake attempts, examples where losses have accrued. We're seeing job applicants using deepfakes to purport to be someone that they're not. And we're seeing increasing volume of vishing or voice cloning and voice related social engineering and video as well. So I'm going to give a few examples of that in a moment. But first of all, what is a deepfake? Well, it's synthetic media. It can be images, video, audio, and text created by using deep learning, artificial intelligence, and it often includes a combination of methods to create a realistic representation of the subject that's been impersonated in order to achieve a particular objective. So what is the purpose of a deepfake? Well, it's effectively to impersonate an identity. And there's many reasons why you might or somebody might want to impersonate an identity. Probably the most common one is actually amusement and entertainment. And we've all seen the online deepfakes of various celebrities, personalities, political figures in the news, and it's becoming more and more common. But it's also can be used for disinformation, inflicting reputational damage, to conduct fraud, for social engineering, and to bypass authentication, which is a critical control in cybersecurity as well. But effectively, it's a step in the attack chain because if you think about it, as we all know, threat actors leverage multiple steps in their attack chain to achieve their goals. And very often, social engineering can be an initial step to gain initial access, but then go on to, conduct lateral movement and privilege escalation in order to achieve their goals. So the primary vectors of deepfake misuse are in digital communications, in that like fake video, audio, and fake messaging, influencing operations, so fake online videos and pictures and fake audio. In terms of biometric authentication to fool face and voice authentication mechanisms, which are very common today. And then in lots of applications and submissions processes, identity verification processes, faking identities and identity documentation in order to bypass those mechanisms as well is another very common vector. So I kind of see deepfakes in digital communications is what you could call social engineering 2.0. So in the past, we had the likes of badly worded phishing emails and things like that. And now we're at the next level with in terms of the what the tools can achieve in terms of more realistic social engineering attempts. And probably want
And
to
important, most
talk about
importantly, right?
is voice cloning. It is now ridiculously easy to clone someone's voice. You only need less than 10 seconds of someone's voice to create a pretty realistic clone of the voice. I have an example here of there's lots of content of me speaking online, including the likes of recording of this webinar. So this is a webinar from last year that's available online. Anybody could download that audio and
An important, most important thing
just
I
take
think
grab a little bit of this
about exposure
audio
management.
and then download it. Track the audio using common free tools. Pick any of a wide range of voice cloning software, which basically ingests that audio to create a clone, and then you can make that voice say anything. So, for example, here's me myself on this call saying, a poem by William Wordsworth that we all know. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er vales and hills. And now I can use my voice clone, which I have given an example here, to create a voice clone and make
I
myself.
wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils, beside the lake, beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze.
I think you can tell there that's a very realistic view of my voice, and that can be done really with anybody's voice once you grab that audio. The good news is then you can speak any language. So here's me speaking in Swedish.
Jag vandrade ensam som ett moln, som flyter på höga dalar och kullar, när jag på en gång såg ett hav, en mängd gyllene påskliljor. Bredvid sjön, under träden, fladdrar och dansar i vinden.
So lots of use cases for this. You can leave voicemails for somebody using a voice clone, giving an instruction, a boss giving an instruction to an employee to release some documentation or to send, transaction, a financial transaction. So voicemails, audio messaging, very often they can be used in live audio conversations and be played in real time. Someone on a video conference but goes off, the usual claim that, oh, my camera's playing up today, so they go off camera and then use the audio to convince somebody that it's really them when it's not. And then very powerfully can be combined with video deepfakes as well. And what we're seeing now is a step forward in terms of, with the combination of agentic AI, you can use the voice cloning to power automated mass vishing. So we saw this attack in recent months, where a threat actor group used VoIP-based calling services for phishing operations, abusing legitimate AI-powered voice calling platforms to automate social engineering calls at scale. And because the agentic AI was able to adjust its narratives and tactics in real time, depending on the response of the target, it became a very powerful ability to scale up social engineering attempts without the need for a human in the loop. And they were able to configure voice styles, including gender and regional accents. And it was quite a successful campaign with many organizations compromised, including some of the ones mentioned on the screen there. What you typically see as well is attackers masquerading as a legitimate authority. With urgent requests, very often starting with the messaging to make their identities, personalizing messages to make their identities very credible. Obviously, AI can help correct the language, the spelling, create the urgency, etc. And then often combining with other forms of deepfakes like cloned voice audio messages and doctored pictures and videos. So there's examples, many examples of, we've seen this over the last couple of years, including the Ferrari example of being targeted by deepfakes. And then starting with messaging and then moving to audio to create that credibility, if you like. And then finally, in some cases, even escalating to video. So there is the famous case a couple of years back of Arup, which was an organization which had an office in Hong Kong. And the worker was tricked into believing they were on a multi-person video conference call, when in fact everyone else on the call was actually fake. And the threat actors used publicly available video footage to create deepfake videos and audios. So they started with the message from the CFO, then they moved into video conferencing on the platform with multiple AI-generated personas, and the employee left that call believing that it was truly they had been speaking with their management team and remitted $25 million to five different bank accounts. You've also got now the ability for real-time face swapping. So you've got you can now impersonate someone else on a video conferencing call by choosing, just having a static picture of somebody else and then superimposing that on your face. and it appears to the person at the other end that it's actually that other person on the call. And one of the big examples we're seeing of this is hiring fraud. So a massive campaign out of North Korea where they're aspiring to be hired as remote IT workers and masquerading as other existing people, but not actually those people at all. And many cases where that's been detected, but obviously we don't know of all the cases where the person actually got hired into the environment. And we know that that's is actually there's a dual purpose to this. One is that they get hired in order to generate funds for the North Korean state. But then secondly, they've also got typically IT workers with privileged access into these environments and all of the risks that that entails as well.
I think, Brian, if you combine that with the Shiny Hunters vishing campaign, it's one thing doing that real time face swap to be able to impersonate somebody, but combining that with the abilities of conversational AI like Bland AI and others that they've made use of, you can very quickly see, well, actually, an interactive cloned voice and video. It's going to be extremely difficult to work out. Actually, just forces that point even more. How can we guarantee authenticity of an identity in the person that we're speaking to? And that case from Arup, that was a couple of, yeah, it was a couple of years ago. But actually, you bring that further forward. 18 months further forward, I think we are from then. Technology has developed, and actually, that threat has increased and become a lot more difficult to detect.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is it was, it's become relatively easy to create deepfakes over the last couple of years. What we're seeing now is the tools getting extremely powerful, but also the ability to scale and automate it, particularly through the use of agentic AI, where you can actually then, launch attacks against many targets simultaneously. In terms of disinformation and influence operations, so yeah, we've seen this for some time, right, going back to previous the previous US presidential campaign, where we saw deepfakes of the candidates, and we also saw Russia targeting Ukraine's first lady with false claims to discredit, if you like, Zelensky and his family. And yeah, it's just so easy now using these tools to try and smear other political targets that you might have, or not necessarily just political targets, but any targets you might have. And with the tools, you can create platform-specific content. You can segment, target, particular segments of the audience. You can rapidly distribute content and synchronize across multiple channels, and the whole goal is rapid viral spread. So by that, the time that it's disproved or that somebody comes out and says, "I didn't actually say that," or "I didn't actually do that," it's already been viewed by millions of people who might ne not necessarily have seen the rebuttal. It's also now so easy to get anyone to say anything. So you just need to take a photograph and use the clone voices. So now here's a previous picture of me, and then I can superimpose using automatic lip syncing the voice clone I created earlier.
I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils, beside the lake, beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze.
We'll all know William Wordsworth by heart by the end of this presentation. The other thing you can easily do now is preserve identities in video deepfake. So you just give literally a text prompt saying, what you want in the picture, and then supply it with the pictures of who you want in it, and then automatically the a very realistic video can be created. So you can imagine the ability to superimpose people into scenes and claim that there's something amiss going on, whereas in fact it's all completely fake generated. So lots of impacts of disinformation. For individuals it can be very, very severe impact with reputational damage. It can impact your career, It can cause doxing, where your physical location is being shared. It can result in physical and online intimidation and threats of violence. In terms of, for-profit enterprises, this is not just in the political sphere, right? I mean, it's not, and not just in the individual sphere. It can have significant impact on a reputational damage for your brand, your stock price, your market value, your customer perception. If there's someone out there smearing your brand, then that can impact, customers can actually believe that and potentially take real life, in market impacting decisions, which could impact you as well and your overall brand perception. And even in the non-for-profit sector, it can impact, public support, political support, funding, donations, volunteers, and other types of cooperation as well. So lots of impacts of that can happen for you there. So moving on to biometric authentication use cases, it can be used to fool face and voice authentication mechanisms. So automated voice recognition is very common in customer contact centers and at financial institutions, service desks, and mobile banking applications. And attackers using deepfake audio can impersonate using clone voices and text-to-speech to bypass those mechanisms. And similarly for identity verification processes, including automated biometric face recognition becoming a lot more common. I think we've all been through those processes in one way or another. And again, those can be threatened by attackers using deepfake images and videos. And there's different ways of doing it. It can be a presentation attack just literally into the camera, or there's also injection attacks where virtual cameras can pretend there's a camera there when there's not, and the deepfake can be injected in that way as well. And then finally, the applications and submissions, and I think we've all been part of KYC, Know Your Customer processes for onboarding and account generation, where it's a combination of some of those biometrics plus IDs, etc. And there's been a 16 or 17% increase in digital forgery in the last 3 years. So similar techniques being used with presentation and injections attacks, often used in conjunction with stolen or fake or doctored IDs. So lots of things to take away here. Social engineering 2.0, you need to, there's people issues, process issues, and technology issues to consider here. So social engineering, stay aware and vigilant. Keep your people informed and up to date of these new forms of social engineering, and tighten up on the remote hiring processes to address, make sure don't rely just on a remote video interview to verify someone's identity. In terms of the process side, evaluate and make processes more robust to deepfake social engineering and test regularly, and monitor for that brand and VIP misuse and disinformation, and have a response plan in place. And particularly when there's critical decision making and transactions to be made, then have extra steps in your process to verify the authenticity of a particular step that you're taking. Obviously, we need to think about MFA now in terms of biometric and non-biometric elements, particularly if the biometric elements are being faked. Improve identity verification tools to mitigate these types of presentation and injection attacks. Implement deepfake detection solutions, and there's many of them now come on the market that can help in this area. And then never has zero trust been more important, and least privilege and continuous verification being more important in the age of deepfakes as well. With that, I'll hand over to Rich to talk about the rise of agentic AI.
Thanks, Brian, because it's not all about just about deepfakes. But we have the agentic AI, which is number one topic at the moment. So let's just start with a quick poll. And that poll is, how concerned are you about the threat actors using agentic AI in their attacks? You're not a c concerned at all. You sleep very well at night. You're a little concerned, quite concerned, or you haven't slept in days because of it. I'll just give that a few more seconds now. Okay, there we go. So we'll cap those off, Rebecca, and share those. Now, it's interesting to see there that absolutely nobody on this webinar has had a great night's sleep, as we've all had our sleep disturbed ever so slightly when it comes to the use of agentic AI. And actually, the over 60% there quite concerned, and I think rightfully so. And 11% there haven't slept in days, which is also fully understandable there. And I think it's probably a similar boat that that most people are in. So it's a pretty good view of the outside world there, outside of this webinar.
It's encouraging
So
that they still join the webinar even though the 11% haven't slept in days, that
that's
they
very that is commitment to the cause, and we very much appreciate it. So let's move on. I think we can't talk about the dead internet theory without talking about something that actually pretty almost writes itself, really. And that was the advent of Moltbook. So the creation of a social network for AI agents that is completely for AI and for humans to look on from the outside. Now, obviously, it's a great example, and opens our eyes up to actually, what is actually happening wider. We look at this in the context and the confines of Moltbook, where effectively we're watching AI have that social interaction. Now, some of that does need a bit of there's a little bit of smoke and mirrors there with some human interaction to kick off some of the activities, but it does paint that picture of actually how well AI is starting to have those conversations. And if we look back at how bots, particularly around influence operations, having a complete botnet of bots being able to communicate around a subject and peddling a similar view, you can see actually how that proliferation and eventually becoming very much a sort of source of truth, particularly when we start thinking about, well, actually, what is AI's knowledge built upon? AI's knowledge is built upon the internet. It's built upon views. It includes things like X, Facebook and other social media platforms. So you can see actually how does that knowledge suddenly develop and develop AI's view of the world, particularly as it's being churned and built upon AI. So you could ask the question, are we in for an AI Armageddon on the horizon? But I think that's something we will look at seeing, something for us to bear in mind. One of the things that is going to affect it is, there is a proliferation of AI agents, the development of AI models. But one of the things a lot of them have in connection between them is that none are disclosing, very few are disclosing internal safety results. And that real fear that's being driven at the moment is that they're being built without safety and without security as the number one goal, and very much being an afterthought. So allowing them to be misused. And actually, when we talk about, Brian talked about social engineering with deepfakes. If we start looking at how do attackers compromise an organization, then that's something that has definitely changed over the last 18 months. Myself and Brian were joined at our Security First conference by Sean Howell, who's the managing director of Redshift, who's just joined the Integrity family down in South Africa last week. And actually, he was very clear. Actually, his guys and the pen testers today and the attackers, they're less and less targeting the humans, although that is definitely a an approach that's being exacerbated by AI. But actually looking at, there's another persona, there's another identity that they are targeting, and that's actually of agents, because they are becoming increasingly the attack surface that's undefended, that is being targeted by attackers, particularly through prompt injection and others. So that safety and security element being an afterthought is something that's being actively exploited by attackers, particularly as we become more AI first as organizations. And we've seen that in real world examples where, earlier this year, the first or notably first AI agent-driven cyber attack was conducted by Chinese state sponsors that subverted and made use of Anthropic's Claude code. Tricked it into believing that it was carrying out a legitimate cybersecurity audit being delivered by somebody within that organization, effectively jailbreaking it and tricking it into carrying out a mass or an AI augmented and operated attack, being able to identify weaknesses, being able to exploit them, and allowing the state-backed actors to be able to compromise systems. Now, it's not to say that was fully automated from start to finish, but hugely increased, and you can see that AI operations at scale, at machine speed, are able to carry out these attacks, much, much quicker than us human mere mortals can carry out. And actually, we take that a step further, and Expo is a autonomous pen testing AI agent and platform, and HackerOne, their US leaderboard. So HackerOne, very much being a bug bounty platform that organizations use to encourage ethical hackers to identify bugs, disclose them, so they can remediate them before they're exploited. And Expo is now the leading ranked number one hacker on their leaderboard. And in a 90-day surge, you can see they're discovered and submitted over 1,000 vulnerabilities, which is surpassing the output of thousands of human researchers. So we're seeing that being used to be able to identify those vulnerabilities. And we can't have that conversation without discussing Mythos, which is taking the world by storm. We've got finances talking about it, cybersecurity professionals talking about it. So you can obviously see the impact and the fear that that is having there, which is only taking that one step further. So, with it purportedly being able to process and discover vulnerabilities, famously a 27-year-old vulnerability in OpenBSD that underpins huge amounts of the internet, considered a very secure operating system, alongside thousands of other vulnerabilities. Now, we could probably spend an entire webinar talking about Mythos, and we're going to line something up to talk about that. And actually, if you want to ask any questions, feel free, and we can get into that. But there's obviously some truth, some fear mongering there. But it is something that we've got to sit up and pay attention to, that models like that are changing the landscape, changing the entire game when it comes to cybersecurity from a positive perspective in terms of what we can use it for on the defensive side. But that fear and the reason why it's not been released yet, or the purported reason that it can be that hacker's super weapon. So all of that working together to drive that scale that attacks can take place, but also changing very much the attack paths and the activity that we are seeing and that we will see further going forward when it comes to threat actors. So that is time. We've touched into a few different areas there. So some key takeaways before we wrap up. The internet is clearly not completely dead, only half dead, but that is something that is going to change, and probably change very, very rapidly. We've seen that over the last couple of years, that growth in AI activity, particularly targeted against things like logins, as an example. Deep fakes are on the rise, and in fact, actually, I'd probably say we're one step further, not just on the rise, but are very much part and parcel of daily life, and that is what is going to be challenging that that trust, that authenticity, misinformation, disinformation, and we need to start looking and thinking about how do we authenticate, how do we verify? And I think that's a very, very good question there, is how do we verify that something that we're considering as being trusted or true is actually as true as we expect. And all of that is being turbocharged by autonomous agentic AI and AI agents, increasing that capability. But also, it is a tool that isn't all just for the attackers to work out how they can exploit us and how they can look for zero-day vulnerabilities and how they can target our end users. But also, that is very much a core technology and core strength that we need to be looking at. So, if we're not doing it right now and today, then we should be looking at exactly how we can collaborate, how we can create that human AI collaboration to orchestrate our defenses to defend against these new threats. So I'll just finish up. We're going to get into the Q&A very, very quickly, but just to touch upon some upcoming webinars and events. So we have a webinar coming up on Wednesday the 29th, Seeing the Unseen and Mastering the Attack Surface Management. And also going on around the globe at the moment, we are running our Security First conferences. We are in Milan on this Thursday coming, and then Jamaica and Trinidad the week after. With a few more dates left. So if you're in that region and haven't signed up yet, please use the QR code. You can trust that QR code, and sign up to those events. So with that, we'll jump into the Q&A because we've got a few minutes left. We've got a couple of questions in. If you have any further questions, please fire them at myself and Brian. If we can't answer them in the time, we will follow up on email with responses to them. So the first question is, how do you authenticate or verify authenticity in today's AI world? Brian, I'll hand it over to yourself because I think really a lot of that, if we're talking about particularly authenticating and verifying the authenticity, that a lot of it will come to in the realm of deepfakes.
I think first of all, we shouldn't forget all of the good hygiene and security controls that we know are crucially important in terms of identity and authentication. So issues like, multi-factor authentication, and particularly, the move towards zero trust access, where you give least privilege and, never trust, always verify continuously. All of those things are important, and even more important actually in the current age. Secondly, I think, as I mentioned earlier, when there's a critical transaction, something, a step to be taken that has a significant impact, so the likes of a major financial transaction, paying a supplier, sending money to a bank account, or releasing sensitive data to some destination, it's not enough to rely on, oh, I heard someone's voice, so therefore I can just go ahead and do it. You need to make sure that those critical transaction steps are robust in the face of deepfake type attacks. So even simple things like training and educating people that before they take a step like that, if you have any suspicion at all. For example, there's the common one where you're talking to somebody, sounds like your boss, it sounds like a colleague, but actually you're not, there's something not, they're asking you to do something that sounds a bit off. Then even just a simple, query about, maybe they gave you a book recommendation last week, and you could just say, what was that book recommendation you gave me again last week? Just to kind of check something personal that an attacker wouldn't know, in order to verify it is actually the individual. So that's a layer on top of the building in the robust processes. And then finally, as I mentioned, I think there's lots of good solutions that have come out now around detecting deepfake. And some of the prime vectors would be in voice authentication, in the likes of contact centers. So now there's technologies available to detect a synthetic voice, rather than a live human voice. So I think a lot of those are, there's a standalone tools, and some of them are being integrated into the existing platforms. So I think it's good to look at those. Same for video conferencing. There's now, solutions available where you can have live monitoring of video calls to see, detect if an individual on a call is a deep fake or not. And then finally, identity verification as well. Lots of tooling to augment, whether IDs are fake, whether somebody who's doing a live biometric authentication is fake, and then also. To test images and videos, whether it's supplied offline or online, are synthetically generated or not. So I think all of these aspects need to be considered in the new world.
Brilliant. Thank you, Brian. So I'll just take the next one. We're going to run out of time. We've got some questions coming in. Please keep them coming in, and we will, before we close, and we will follow up on email. I'll try and get through a couple very quickly. One there is Mythos going to take my job? Well, I hope it's not going to take mine. And I think, is it, I don't know, I think that's, we could probably just say Mythos. We can put that together with, generative AI technologies and agentic autonomous systems as well. Put that together. There is definitely going to be a rebalancing of the workforce. I think rather than looking at it as being actually, is it going to take my job? I think we need to look at actually how do we adapt ourselves to be in a to make sure that we're working collaboratively, embracing the use of AI to collaborate with it as part of our job role. The big threat is definitely going to be to entry level and graduate positions. Not so much of them being wiped out and taken away, but actually, are they going to be recruited for at the same level, or are we looking? Is there an opportunity to bring people further into to that loop? If we think about human in the loop, the question is, where does the human sit in the loop? That's something that will evolve over time. If I had to just reference a bit of a stat to kind of tie that in, you look at consultancy houses, PwC cut 120,000 graduate roles because they believe that AI is going to address a lot of that. So we can see at that entry level, but we're always going to need people that's going to be able to validate and verify. So as much as we talked about some of the authenticity in terms of information we're seeing, how people are presenting themselves and authentication, we still need to also bear that in mind when it comes to the data that we're getting from our systems, particularly where we're making use of AI. And the blind obedience or the blind acceptance of everything as fact is definitely what is going to trip us up when it comes to AI. So is it going to take your job? I don't think it's going to instantly take jobs, but it is going to refocus. And potentially, actually, if we look at the work that it's going to create from a patching and vulnerability perspective, unless we can fully automate and trust that process and very, very quickly, I'd say it's going to create a hell of a lot more work for us. To wrap on time, and we'll respond back on the other ones. There's a question around the board of directors saying engagements. I think there's probably a few bits there. That's being driven by, from an AI perspective, being driven by that desire from boards to drive more and more AI into the organization, but for the sake of AI at the moment, so just more AI. But we'll follow up on a question on an answer on that, and the same with the second question we've got outstanding there about some of the policy changes. So hard up on time. I thank everybody for joining us today on this webinar, and thank Brian for joining us and sharing his thoughts and knowledge on deepfakes. And I'll just give a quick thank you to Rebecca, who's driven everything in the background. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks all. Bye now.